Hello, I'm Craig Eason at Fathom World, and I'm also the host of the Aranax podcast. Now, I have spoken to Jutta Paulus. She's the European MEP who is the rapporteur behind the proposal to bring shipping into the European Emissions Trading Scheme, the ETS. The proposal is now at the European Parliament, and should it get through that, it then goes to the tripartite talks and goes through the Commission before becoming enacted as a law. Now, I spoke to her about the proposal and what it means, as well as talking to her about an additional proposal in the paper to make a mandatory 40% reduction in ship efficiency or fuel efficiency of vessels calling at European ports. It all uses the European MRV system as its basis for data. So the interview is here in full, and excerpts of it, of course, are on the Aranax podcast.
The last time this issue was debated in 2015, the Commission more or less promised that they would not introduce shipping into the ETS back then, but they would do it at the soonest possible next time. So I think the time is now, because we do have the shipping file on our desk right now. The second reason is, of course, Fridays for Future, the whole climate movement, which really took up speed in 2019, because with the drought, with the floods, with the heavy rains that were encountered in parts of Europe, people, well, thought, okay, maybe climate change is closer to our home than we think. And there was a lot of support from actually normal people, so to speak, not just the activists, saying we have to do something about it. And personally, I believe, well, those Fridays for Future kids, they all have parents, don't they? And those parents are getting asked very inconvenient questions. So they also want to act, because it's on their conscience that they have to save a better world for their children. And as an outcome of all this, the new European Commission announced the Green Deal, saying we will make Europe the first climate neutral continent. And Ms. von der Leyen promised to include shipping in the ETS when she took up office. So it's very clear that this will happen inevitably. And I'm thinking, well, why not do it as soon as possible? Because there is no time to lose in the climate crisis.
The way this is being brought through the European Parliament is, there was one of the agenda items to look at the MRV, the reporting system for vessels coming into European ports, and to see how it could be aligned with the IMO's data collection system, two comparable but still very different reporting system that ship owners, ship operators need to follow. But you decided to go one step further. You didn't so much look at how you could align the MRV with the IMO system. In fact, you've actually used this as a stepping stone to get more out of shipping in this context. Right. So how confident are you then that this is going to go to the Parliament? It's been in the Environment Committee. It's going to go to the House, to the European Parliament, but then it's got other steps to go through within the Commission. Could you elaborate a little bit about these steps? How long you think it's going to take, and why you're confident that these steps will work this time?
Well, how long it's going to take is a very good question, because our whole agenda and schedule has been quite turned upside down through the COVID pandemic, through the restrictions for the work, not being able to work together indoors, being restrained to video conferencing with all the implications when it comes to translation, for example. It's a bit difficult. But to put a long story short, we have a very broad support in the ENVI committee. So I'm counting on having a broad support in Parliament too, when we will be voting for it in the plenary. With this having been done, the file will enter the so-called trilogue. trilogue means we have three parties sitting together, which is parliament. I'm representing parliament, obviously, as the rapporteur, which is Council of Member States, which will be represented by the current presidency and the commission. And up to now, we have not yet received an answer from the German presidency whether they think they will be able to open the trilogue until the end of the year. Because, of course, I can understand them. They will have to negotiate the budget. They will have to finish the climate law, which we will vote on in September also. And the climate law, of course, is very, 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 very important, because it would be very strange if the European Union would turn up at the next climate conference saying, well, we have not been able to set ourselves a new target. There wasn't time for that. So I do understand that the German presidency cannot tell me yet whether they will actually achieve to open trilogue this year. I truly hope that they will do so. And in trilogue, we will have to find a compromise between parliament's position, member state position, and commission. And well, we'll see how the member states will be acting here. The council's position was very, very, well, they didn't do a lot with the fire. They said, okay, we'll just align it with the IMO a little bit, and that's about it. I mean, we did alignment with IMO as far as possible too, of course. No problem. I don't want to put additional administrative burden on ship owners or ship operators wherever possible, because no one actually profits from additional administrative burden. But for example, for us and also for council, it was important that the parameter cargo carried, which is not present in the data collection system of the IMO, should be kept as mandatory, because only with that parameter we can calculate the carbon intensity of the goods that are actually transported with the respective ship.
I'm going to come on to the implications of that in a second, but just staying briefly with the emissions trading scheme, how do you actually bring shipping into an established emission trading scheme?
Well, there are several options, actually. We have now found a compromise in Parliament where we are saying, okay, shipping should go in the ETS, shipping certificates should be subject to full auctioning, so there will be no free certificates for anyone, but every certificate will have to be paid for. And Parliament says, or at least Envy Committee says, we want half of the revenues from this ETS certificates being auctioned within the ship operators, dedicated to a fund. This fund should bring forward research, development, innovative solutions, and also a part of this fund should be reserved for marine biodiversity, and the other half of the revenues should go to the European Union as own resources, which we urgently need also for our COVID recovery fund. And how the exact mechanism would work: will the certificates be auctioned at a central place? Will there be auctions in the member states? How will the allocation actually take place? How many certificates will be issued for the shipping sector? That's for the DG Clima to decide. For the, how do you say in English? I'm not even sure. Direction Générale, it's in French.
Director General.
Director General, yes, that's for Director General Klima to decide and to set up the mechanism. What we are also asking for in our report is that we are saying for those companies that are small, that are maybe only 3, 4, 5 people, that say we cannot take part in such an auction. This legal stuff is just too much work for us. We cannot find our way through this maze or whatever. I mean, a lot of companies have done so for the last 20 years, so I think it's feasible. But for those who are reluctant to take part, we have found an easy solution saying, okay, if you don't want to take part, then you just have to count your emissions, and at the end of the year, you will have to pay the respective amount of the highest price of the auction into the fund. So you can have an added value by taking part in the auction, because you will have to work for that. You will have to have dedicated personnel, of course, because you may achieve a lower price. But if you say, that's too much for me, then you have the possibility to very easily acquire the necessary certificates by the end of the year.
And what about the impact of this on carbon pricing itself? There's always been that big question about the price of carbon and how that influences companies, not just shipping companies in this case, but land-based companies even, to invest in any efficiency structures or any technologies. What do you think needs to happen with the carbon price?
Well, actually, we have seen quite a few studies when we had the hearing in the environmental committee, and I've also spoken to several researchers who have been working on carbon pricing for a very long time. And every single one was saying, well, with the current carbon price, which is around 25, 30 euro, you will not see any big efficiency gains in shipping, because the avoidance costs in shipping are much, much higher. If you would want to build a zero emission vessel, that would be an equivalent to several hundred euros per ton of CO2. So basically what the inclusion in the ETS is doing is two things. First of all, you will collect money actually to feed this fund, which goes in turn back to the industry, fostering research, development, innovation. And secondly, you're setting the signal, carbon emission is not for free. There is no possibility to put your carbon waste in the atmosphere for free. And thirdly, you may have the effect that if, for example, shipping increases a lot, increases more than we have, than DG Clima has said, okay, they will probably use so and so many certificates. So if there is an increase in shipping, then there's also an increase in the demand for certificates. And that puts pressure on other sectors, because it's a market, right? So if shipping goes and buys certificates, which maybe other players like energy industry or other sectors would have bought for a lower price, then the price would go up. So this does play a role for the other sectors.
And the other issue relating to carbon pricing and certificates is a lot of ship owners will bunker outside of the European Union. They'll bunker in Singapore, they'll bunker in the US, they'll bunker elsewhere other than in the EU. Is there the risk of some sort of carbon slippage or carbon migration here?
No, because the emissions are priced. It's not a fuel tax. If it were a fuel tax, then this risk would actually be there, of course. A ship owner could say, or a ship operator could say, well, I'm just going to St. Petersburg or to Southampton and pick up fuel there. But we are not pricing the fuel, we are pricing the emissions. The MRB register says you will have to surrender the data on where have you come, how long is the distance that you have traveled, how high are your emissions, how much cargo did you transport, and from the emissions that you're giving to the register, the certificates are deduced. They're not deduced from you bunkering fuel wherever, but just from the emissions. It's irrespective of where you have bunkered. It's irrespective of who owns you. It's irrespective of the flag state. So we have a level playing field here, actually.
And now the other main part, I could say, within the proposals that are going forward relates to something you touched on a second ago, and that's the a reduction in the intensity and the carbon intensity of vessels, where you want to see vessels which come into European ports in a similar way to the ETS. Any vessel that is covered by the ETS would be covered by this proposal of having a 40% reduction on their carbon intensity by 2030.
Yes. And that's, this reduction
That's not dissimilar. I'm just saying that's not dissimilar to the short-term goals that the IMO is trying to work on either. It's a bit similar, actually.
It is a bit similar, but still different, because what we're saying is we are using the reliable data that we have collected using the MRB, whereas the IMO has picked the year of 2008, which means they are picking a year with very, very high emissions. So it's easier to come down from these high emissions. And secondly, they don't have really reliable data for that. They have industry data, which has been handed over freely, and they don't have any data at all for cargo carried. So that's the big difference. We do have the parameter cargo carried in the MRB register, so we actually can really calculate the carbon intensity. And again, it was very important for us not to punish those who have already acted and tried to become more efficient, who have applied measures, who have, for example, renewed the hulls, who have deployed new turbines, who have deployed new engines, because those first movers are already below the average of the whole fleet. And the goal is not 40% for the individual ship or for the individual company, but 40% below the average of the whole fleet. So if you're already, let's say, 20% below the average, you have only a very small way to cover still.
So when you talk about 40% of the whole fleet, that's a broad definition, because within that definition you've got different ship types. You've got vessels that are more based on the volume of the space, like a RoPax or a passenger ship. Then you've got vessels that carry a cargo and discharge all of that cargo in one go, or you've got vessels like container vessels, which tend to be, you know, dropping off that cargo at one point, picking up a little bit. So the workload of each individual ship and the size of the ship is going to be significantly different. So when you go for a ballpark 40%, are you not worried that you're going to get some vessel types, not just sizes, but some vessel types that will be predominantly higher than the 40%? So you'll end up with all of one type of ship almost. You know, all owners of a specific ship type needing to make a reduction, but then find that there is a lot of vessel types of another type of ship that may have to go, well, actually, I'm already below. I don't need to do anything. So is it likely to be too indiscriminate?
No, I was being imprecise. I thought it would be easier to use this word, the whole fleet. But of course, our report says that the commission should define the baseline for the different ship categories, and the categories depend on the sort of ship you're using. So you have, for example, the container ships are one category, and within this category of container ships you have an additional differentiation by size. Because, of course, the bigger the ship is, the lower is the carbon intensity in the first place. And a Ro-Ro carrier, for example, could never be compared with a container ship when it comes to carbon intensity. So, of course, there will be different baselines for different ship categories and sizes. I was just being imprecise because I wanted to make it clear that the goal was not for the individual ship, because that was a big concern of ship owners saying, well, I have invested so much and my ship is so good already, and now I have to reduce by another 40%. And I was always like, no, you're already at minus 30%. So you have to reduce only 10% from the average of, let's say, Ro-Ro carriers, let's say bulk carriers, whatever your ship is belonging to, so to speak.
And how do you envisage the this reduction target being enforced? Because if you say 40% by 2030, you might find that all of the ship operators try and do it all in 2029 to meet that target. And obviously you're going to have to create some sort of penalties. How do you think that would be?
Yes, that's that. We thought about that too, actually. And in the report, we put down a linear regression. So you cannot say, okay, I'll wait until 2029 and not do anything before that. So we will have the evaluation of this carbon intensity on a yearly base. And of course, there will be penalties, because else you could never enforce anything if you didn't impose penalties.
And what sort of penalties do you think you'd have to do to make them hurt, to make them create change?
Well, we've used the word dissuasive financial payments, so that the penalty is high enough for the ship operator to say, okay, that was maybe not so good an idea. I should maybe have just resorted to slow steaming because my ship is so old, because that's something you can always do without any investment. You can just go resort to slow steaming, then you'll use a lot less fuel and become less carbon intensive. That's clear. So that was, for us, it was very important to have this technology neutral approach, saying, we don't care how you do it, just use less fuel per cargo, period.
One of the examples that I've got there, though, is when the sulfur regulations came in and there was a requirement for low sulfur fuel. And when it came to fuel testing and or analysis of the exhaust from vessels, if a vessel was found to be exceeding the sulfur content in the fuel or from the, it could be penalized, but it tended to be then become a legal issue for that particular member state where it was actually caught. So for example, a vessel coming into Sweden was penalized. The port authority went on board, they did the tests, they found the vessel to be non-compliant, and they may have detained it or issued a fine. That fine became a legal dispute and it became a revenue generation. Effectively, the fine was a national issue, not an EU-wide. I think there was also discussion about the discrepancies between the level of the fines that were being placed around the European Union mm-hmm. when it came to the sulfur regulation. So the risk is that you've got a regulation that's going to have dissuasive measures, but they may be variable, and the revenue just goes into the accounts of those member states.
Well, actually, we do not have this, or at least in what we were envisioning is actually that the EU itself would be the one calculating the carbon intensity of the respective company, because the MRV register is put together at EU level. It's not the member states that are doing this register, it's the EU. And so only the EU can, in effect, calculate the carbon intensity or the carbon footprint, whatever, of the respective company, because the company might be calling in Athens, in Marseille, in Rotterdam, in Stockholm, wherever. I mean, all those ports are within the EEA area. But at the end, the carbon intensity is, as I said, not for the single ship, but for the respective shipping company, which has to make sure that the average will be held. And no single member state could even calculate that carbon intensity.
I get that, but isn't this going to be something new for the European Union to do? Is it something that they have got any experience with previously?
Well, actually, what they have been, we do have experience with looking at data which has not necessarily been collected by the union in the first place. We do have experience with penalties being imposed on companies and also on member states, actually, I'm talking of infringement procedures, of course. And so I don't think that will become a major issue, or that Commission will not be able to do it. We also have the same thing with the agencies that the European Union is operating, which can also issue payments or even penalties for non-compliant companies.
And finally, when do you see this 40% reduction actually coming into effect? When do you think that might be cleared? Has it got the same time scale as the inclusion of shipping into the ETS, because it sits on the same bill effectively as the ETS amendment?
Yes. I mean, originally when I took over that file in July 2019, I thought that we might be done with everything by June 2020. And obviously this has not been the case. And so I thought that we might start with ETS and also with the efficiency target by January 2021. And due to the situation being as it is, I hope that we will actually be able to start by January 2022. That would be great. But the 40% target is for 2030. And we are using the baseline 2018-2019 because we said, okay, maybe a single year is not representative enough. So let's take those 2 years where we have reliable data and take the average of those 2 years.
And when will the data for 2019 be made available?
Ask the commission. No, I don't know. I mean, the good thing about the MRV is actually it's monitoring, registration, and verification of data. So we have those independent verificators which really have a look at the data and saying, okay, this is not possible. This data entry point is simply not possible. That company cannot really claim having gone, 10,000 kilometers and having used only two liters of fuel, so to speak. So you have this independent body checking on the data, and that requires quite some time. And then you have to put together all the data coming from the different verification offices and compile it and actually make the report. We received the report from the European Commission for the 2018 data in, I think, in May 2020. They have promised to be quicker next time because it's always the same thing. 2018 was the first year of collecting data. So when from your own experience, when you're doing something for the very first time, you need much more time in finding the correct process, in making it easier to actually access the data, to put things together. So they already told us also that they have found already room for improvement in processing of the data. So I do expect that we might see a report for 2019, even this year.
Thank you very much, Jutta Paulus, for your time.
Thank you very much. And have a nice day.